We are so excited to launch the Woman Run podcast. Wright, Lindsay, and Jennings started Woman Run in 2019 to help build community and to share the stories of those who inspire us. Over the years, we've highlighted women who start businesses, women who lead businesses, and women who help others grow through mentorship and collaboration. We believe that building community through shared experiences helps everyone thrive. A rising tide lifts all boats, and we want to be part of the tide of change. With Woman Run, the podcast, we want to meet you where you are and provide the resources and motivation that you can access when your schedule allows. We hope you enjoy this new format, and we look forward to hearing from you about speaker ideas and how Woman Run can continue to cultivate this community.
I'm Meredith Lowry, an attorney at Wright, Lindsay & Jennings, and your host for today. I'm here with Keisa Smith, the Executive Director for Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. And I'm so excited to talk to Keisa about everything this organization does for our state and supporting women, children, families, but also like its long history and the current state of events, because we just got done with a legislative session.
Oh, yeah.
So let's start.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the history.
For sure. No, thank you. So one of the things that folks don't often know about us is we're almost 50 years old. So in a couple of years, we're going to be celebrating that pretty big. But Arkansas Advocates, we're 47 years old now. We are a statewide, nonpartisan policy shop. And I tell folks, it's not the best of terms, but I like to use that we're grass tops. But we coordinate heavily with grassroots organizations because we're really focused on all policies, all laws, anything administratively that we can do to help advance children. And when you focus on children and uplifting them and their lives and making sure that they can live the life that they are, that they should be able to, then they will ultimately lift up their families as well. So we're heavily focused on how can we make things better for children, particularly, you know, in areas of education and hunger, economic advancement, which means, again, bringing up their parents. How can we focus on things that help moms that are pregnant and things of that nature? So a lot of focus on, you know, how do we make our state better by focusing on the youngest citizens that we have?
I love that term, grass tops. That's
a
good term. But the history too.
Yes.
I mean, there are some very big things
that
Advocates has done in the past. It's weird to think about 50 years, even though I've been volunteering for Advocates for at least 10 of those.
Right.
But y'all were instrumental in so many things that I think a lot of families in Arkansas take for granted.
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest, I say one of the biggest things, but I will say the biggest thing is our involvement with our kids and the creation of our kids. We were right at the table, very appreciative of Governor Huckabee and recognizing the need to make sure that children, like, who can't agree that children should be covered and children should have health insurance? But we had, at the time that he was governor, we had one of the highest rates of uninsured children. And so he was willing to look at the CHIP program, which is tied to Medicaid, and see the way that we can work it so that we could develop the ARKids program. And we were definitely, we being Arkansas, was one of the first states to really lean into that and to create a program that multiple states have duplicated since then. So it was an amazing program, and our staff were the ones developing the framework and were able to talk with Governor Huckabee about it, and he embraced it. And here we are, and now we just think that those things are common, and a lot of people think that, like, the federal government created that, and it's like, no, we created that, we being the state of Arkansas, but also, we created that, so.
Yes. So. Advocates was so involved with that piece, and Woman Run talks a lot about money, and trying to get women to also talk about money more, but when it comes to that piece, that healthcare piece, and getting more money back into the family that's crucial for economic development of the family, other businesses.
Yeah. So I don't think we talk enough about the importance of healthcare and its tie. Yeah. So the reality is that when we're talking about money, of course, how much you pay for healthcare is critical. You want to be able to have accessible healthcare that folks can pay for, because I remember being young and feeling like, okay, that price tag for monthly insurance is pretty high. Do I actually need it? You know, back when I thought that, you know, I would never get old and that I would always be healthy, right?
Yeah.
So just like how much we pay every month is a big consideration. But also, like, if you don't have health insurance and you get sick and you're not able to, you know, access care, then what does that mean for your financial bottom line? Like, you know, that is significant. And so we really need to be having a broader discussion about, like, what healthcare means, what it,
yes,
how much our healthcare covers. I'm sure folks can relate to having, you know, even having insurance, thinking you have good insurance, and then, you know, something happens and you get a big, you know, bill and you're like, well, what have I been paying my insurance for? So all of those things are important when we talk about healthcare and bottom line to people's pocketbooks.
So with advocates moving the ball forward.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one big one. I mean, we also SNAP and WIC.
Yeah.
I mean, this is another big piece that advocates has been involved with helping parents get food on the table for their kids.
Yeah. I think, you know, right now, everything is so expensive.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that individuals, we have to think about the safety net. And a lot of times we have a bunch of, sometimes we have a lot of hard conversations about programs like SNAP and WIC, because people have a lot of negative ideas about folks that utilize these programs without, you know, really thinking about the fact that, like, again, life is expensive right now. Wages haven't kept up with the cost of living. And so you never know when someone might find themselves in a position where they need these programs. So we are extremely vocal about the programs that help keep Arkansans healthy, help keep Arkansans fed. And SNAP and WIC are huge. And they are also programs which, you know, unfortunately, despite how poor our state is, the programs are underutilized. So we have one of the lowest utilizations of WIC, and despite all of the conversations about SNAP, we don't have as many people utilizing SNAP as that actually qualify for SNAP.
And that makes me sad. I know, like, there is this discussion in the national news, yeah, and even sometimes in the local news, about these programs, like, that these people utilizing them are somehow not paying taxes.
Right.
And that is the furthest from the truth.
Yeah.
Because we still pay sales tax.
Yeah.
Everyone pays that.
Yeah.
And these are residents that need that support. We lift the welfare, the safety net is to benefit the actual welfare of
right.
people. It is not a bad term.
It's not. And Meredith, honestly, I bet you it would surprise a lot of folks to know that the majority of the individuals that use Medicaid, that use SNAP, that use, I'm not sure about WIC, so let me not throw that yeah. out there, but definitely that use SNAP and that use Medicaid, they work.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say things like, oh, we're using taxpayer dollars, well, it's those individuals' dollars as well. And along with the fact that they, you know, pay sales tax. And you highlight something that's really problematic in the state and really problematic in terms of how we talk about safety net programs, which is everyone knows a negative story. Everyone likes to share a negative story. They know someone, they've got a nephew somewhere who refuses to work. He's still living with his mom. He plays video games all day. Or, you know, they think about these horrible stereotypes about a mom who every time, you know, she feels like she'll have another child and she's only doing that to stay on these programs. Like, folks have these horrible ideas about what the individuals in Arkansas who use these programs look like. But then they'll tell you, you know, oh, I have my next door neighbor, her husband passed. And when her husband passed, she lost that income and she had to use these programs. Or they'll tell the story about their church member who fell on hard times because the company closed and they use these programs. And for them, those folks are the exception to the rule. But the reality is that's what these programs look like. That's what the individuals who are using these programs look like. Most people do not stay on these programs long term. You know, our average use is about 3 to 4 years, and it helps people get back on their feet and get their income settled, and then they're able to not use the programs anymore. So it's a lot of stereotypes that, again, that's something our organization works on, is saying, no, let's really have a conversation about what folks need and what they truly look like, so that we stop looking and leaning into stereotypes that makes these programs super complicated to access. I felt like I got a little preachy
because I'm going to double down on the preachy.
Okay.
I see this as we have the prototype person. One of our past Woman Run speakers is very open that she had WIC.
Yeah.
And now she's a successful author.
Yeah.
And she's, by all measures, happy. Her children are fed and they're growing. She's not on WIC anymore.
Yeah.
She has another second career that's also doing great. So this is what those programs are for.
It is to build
us up and catch us when we need that extra help.
Yeah.
The actual welfare.
If I could tell you something, and I've told this story, it's nothing that people don't know about me, because people know that I'm an attorney. They know that I worked in positions with the state for a long time and that I'm leading this organization. I tell folks, if there is a safety net program that exists, I was on it. Because when I was 19, I got pregnant with my daughter. I was a single mom that was a sophomore in college at the time. I had a part-time job, right, but not enough to take care of a baby. And I had my daughter, and I was on Medicaid, I was on SNAP, I was on WIC, I was on Section 8. And I say that, like, not being facetious about it, but to say, like, those are the programs that helped me graduate college on time, despite having my daughter in the middle of my college career. And then I was able to go on and go to graduate school. I would not have been able to do that if those programs didn't exist. I would have had to leave school to work a full-time job. And while that may have been good for the time, it wouldn't have been good long term. We know the earning potentials of individuals when, you know, you're not able to get some type of additional education past high school. So these programs are critical, and I don't think we acknowledge them enough.
Yeah. So thank you for all the work that Advocates does here.
Okay, yeah.
So let's before we jump into Advocates and the policy work.
Yeah.
At its root, Advocates is also a nonprofit.
Yes.
And so, like, when I say I volunteered, I mean, you know my heart in Soup Sunday. Let's talk about the actual fundraising piece, too,
yes,
because that's essential.
It is. It is. And I will tell you, I got a crash course in fundraising when I came. You know, I always work for the state. So, you know, when I came into this role, I was like, oh, no, we gotta raise our paychecks. So, one of the things about fundraising is, number one, let me first say thank you for being such a consistent volunteer. Soup Sunday is our biggest fundraiser. I am so appreciative that individuals just love this event. It has been so critical for us and helps us raise a lot of dollars that keeps us moving forward. But, you know, a nonprofit is just that. Like, we rely heavily on our donations. We do get grants. We're not an entity that takes state or federal grants. And that's intentionally because we want to make sure that, you know, we're able to say the things that we need to say when we need to say them, which means that, you know, individual donations, private donations, individuals who believe in the work and believe that children, an investment in children, is what we need to make our state better, is what keeps our organization moving forward. And like we've been able to continue to make it for 47 years, which we're excited about. But, you know, right now is kind of a tough time for nonprofits. And so I'm extremely appreciative of folks who still dig deep and support our organization and our work.
No, Laura Kellums will kick me if I don't explain what Soup Sunday is
I should have done a better job.
But you and I are so close to it.
Yeah.
And also, I remember the first time I told my husband I was going to go volunteer at Soup Sunday. He's like, so a soup kitchen?
Right.
But, okay, so explain exactly what Soup Sunday is.
So Soup Sunday is a fundraiser, and what happens is we have a number of area restaurants who come, and we actually have two Soup Sundays. So we have one here in Little Rock, and we have one in Northwest Arkansas. And so we have restaurants that come. They present their best soup. Every restaurant is not a restaurant that actually even has soup on the menu, but they create it. They create some of the most amazing soup dishes. I remember telling my husband about it the first time, and he's from Louisiana, so it was new to him. And he was like, people don't really just want to sit around and eat soup. I was like, oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Like, this is top tier, high level quality soup. And our restaurants take it very seriously. They produce some amazing dishes, and individuals come and they get to be, you know, introduced to new places that they didn't know, and also be reintroduced to places that, you know, are, you know, common, not common, but restaurants that they go to all the time, but that they didn't know, you know, made this type of soup. And it's been great. And I do have to, my folks would kick me if I didn't put in a plug. This is a long time event. Folks know about it. But this year we tied, we got Kevin Shalin, who most people know as the Mighty Rib, to partner with us. He's on our volunteer team, and he has taken it to a whole nother level. He's got new restaurants. He's introducing us to new spaces. He's passionate about it. Like, we're about to take Soup Sunday to another degree. So I'm hoping everybody gets ready for that.
That is exciting. I had not heard this. We have a similar, like, not Mighty Rib, but someone else up in Northwest that was very involved with getting in new restaurants. But they take this so seriously. Like, the competition between the different chefs. I've watched some of the past winners discuss things with each other, and the very friendly banter, but the competitions were real.
I tell you, in Northwest Arkansas, we've had a repeat winner.
Micah.
And so folks are gunning, and it's fun. I mean, it's a competition. They keep it friendly, but folks want to win, and we're just appreciative that, you know, that folks are willing to volunteer and come out, but also that the chefs are like, no, this is important, and they want to put their best foot forward. So it's great.
I also love that Micah wins so often, because Early Bird Catering has catered Woman Run so often, also woman owned.
Yes.
So yeah, all the things.
Yes. And I mean, her soup is truly delicious. So let's put a plug for that. So
I'm sure your husband appreciates it, because a lot of time the Cajun,
so just personal privilege, I got to talk to Micah, and she is from the same area that my husband is from.
Nice. So,
and I bet you, if you talk to Louisianans, they will say New Orleans is overhyped. You got to go to the other side of the state. And so they're both from the Lake Charles area. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So he was super excited. He was like, yeah, I told you we had the best food. See?
So. I have family in Lake Charles, too. So, yeah, I get this. I feel this in my bones.
There you go.
Okay. So let's talk policy then.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
It is a... It's a rough time sometimes with policy, but there had to have been some wins.
Oh, yeah.
So let's start with the wins, and then we'll talk about how we make our state better.
There you go. There you go. I mean, there were some really good things that happened during the session. So individuals in the hunger space have been talking about breakfast and lunch at school for years. So thanks to Senator Dismang for being a dogged advocate around hunger. He has been pushing on this for some time. We were able to see, you know, free breakfast in schools, hoping still that, you know, that we can still get to free lunch and free meals in school, because there is a stigma when children can't afford to pay for food. But the fact that we were able to get over that first hurdle is huge. And there are a lot of legislators who are very, very vested in making sure that we address hunger. So I was super excited to see that. Also, in terms of, I had some notes, so I'm making sure that I look at my notes. And, you know, it was interesting that for some people it was controversial, but I think, you know, as it pertains to, you know, cell phones not being used in school, like that's an important thing. I mean, I don't want to age myself, but we didn't have cell phones when we were in school, and we were just, yeah, we were fine. So I know there's some debate around that, and definitely there's some debate about what schools are going to be required to do. If it's an excessive cost for schools, that's problematic. But we do want to facilitate things that help teachers and help, you know, the classroom time. And so, you know, that was a good thing. And then, you know, we made advancements around maternal health. And I tell folks, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, despite how poorly our state was doing as it pertains to maternal health, we just were not talking about it. And we were not having the conversations that we needed to have about advancement of how we make situations better for pregnant women in Arkansas. And so the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies Act, which was the governor's initiative, was significant, because most people don't know that one out of three births in Arkansas are paid for by Medicaid, which is a lot of births being paid for by the state. And, you know, I remember working at DHS and having a conversation with a doctor maybe 7-8 years ago. And they were talking about the fact that, you know, they can care for a mom, they can see them multiple times, but they're not going to get paid by Medicaid until the mom gives birth.
Oh.
So they don't get any payment during the entire 9 months. And then they get paid at birth. And when they were getting paid, it's like $2,800, right? So
I pay way more than that.
Yeah, I know, right? So, I mean, honestly, we were asking, you know, our medical professionals to work at a really reduced rate. I mean, it was pretty unfair to ask them to do that. And so the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies unbundled that, which means that when a mom comes in to get her prenatal care, the doctor gets a payment, or the facility gets a payment. And that happens every time a mom gets care, and they get paid when, you know, they give birth. So, I mean, all things that should be, like, that's how services are rendered, right? So we finally made that fix in the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies Act, which is significant. And we hope that that means that more providers will get into this space, because we have been losing Medicaid providers. And I don't have to tell you that, like, accessing prenatal care in Arkansas is tough.
Accessing medical care is tough, but yeah, prenatal.
Yes, exactly. I mean,
that baby's coming, you need to be near a doctor. Yeah. So, we need more.
We need
prenatal.
Yeah. We need more providers. I mean, there's data across the board that says, like, we have areas of the state where a mom has to drive at least an hour and a half to get prenatal care. Imagine if you go into labor and you've got to drive an hour and a half.
I had to drive 30 minutes, and I remember screaming the entire way.
right. So, yeah. I mean, how scary is that, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've got to think about these things if we're going to solve what has been appropriately classified as a maternal health crisis in the state. And so, I mean, it was significant to see that done. So there were some really good things that came out of this. So
I agree with you that talking about it is important, and the sea change going on in Arkansas, and more conversations like this of, okay, maternal health is important. Women's health is different than men's health.
Absolutely.
our bodies are not smaller men bodies.
Right.
So let's continue dealing with this and working. I think having a woman as a governor is helpful, especially with this. Yeah. I mean, I know Governor Hutchinson started us moving forward with the Women's Commission, and now we've got this maternal health focus for the governor.
You know, Governor Hutchinson was the first, when Dobbs came out, the very first thing that Governor Hutchinson did, because at that time, again, I was still working for the state and we got a call, and he wanted to have a press conference. And if you know him, you know ideologically he wanted to celebrate the Dobbs win. But at the same time, he was also saying, and now we need to be focused on women's health. Like, if we need to look at what we've done previously, and we need to build upon that. And we need to make sure that Arkansas is one of the safest places to have a baby. Because the reality is that at that time, it absolutely was not. So we're making strides to improve, but we've got a ways to go.
Okay, so you say making strides. I do not want to gloss over that.
Oh, yeah.
We're still 49th in maternal death rate?
We are. And we have the second highest rate of death for moms and the third highest rate of death for babies. Yeah. So we got a long way to go.
More conversations, more focus, more advocacy from great policy groups.
You're sweet.
So
we've got to talk about the barriers, like just like we were having, you know, like we're talking right now. I could be the healthiest mom, I could be the wealthiest mom, but if I've got to drive an hour and a half to get to my practitioner, then I'm in danger. No matter what, right? If I can't get the care that I need, I have a problem. Not fast forward, but look around the state. If I'm a mom that doesn't have transportation, then what does that mean for me getting care? If I'm a mom who works a job that doesn't allow me to take time off for my care, then what does that mean? You know, I am concerned when I hear conversations where we may be villainizing moms for not getting care when we highlight data that says, oh, this many moms, the first time they saw a doctor was when they gave birth. Well, did we talk to that mom? I am 99.9% sure it's not that mom doesn't know that she needs prenatal care. It's whether or not she has insurance. It's whether or not she could get to a doctor. It's whether or not she's able to take time off from her job.
Yep.
So, I mean, those are things we have to have real conversations about. Yeah.
Supporting the family. That's still, like, we're moving the ball forward and hoping that it moves out and permeates everything that supports the family.
Yeah. When I talk to folks, especially when I go outside of the state, because sometimes when I go outside of Arkansas, folks don't know a whole lot about us. But when we're talking about policy, I tell policymakers here and outside of the state that if we are willing to make substantive changes, we will feel the ripple effects of those in Arkansas so much faster than bigger states, because we are smaller. We do have a smaller population. And if we make changes for women, our families, or children that have the biggest hurdles in the rural parts of our state, then we've solved the issues for our more urban areas and our more populous areas. So still, again, a lot of work to be done. So.
Let's talk about some of the other things that weren't as successful, because I know at least one was in postpartum.
Yes.
So
we thought we had it. We thought this was the year. I laugh, but obviously, I mean, I've gotten some time to come to grips with the fact that we had that loss.
Oh, it's always heart-wrenching with a loss.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what advocates was advocating for.
Yeah. So Arkansas is the one and only state in the country that has not extended postpartum coverage for moms. So what most people don't know is that there is a category, and I don't want to get too wonky. I am a policy wonk, so I can get into the weeds. But there is a category called pregnancy Medicaid. And the eligibility for pregnancy Medicaid is higher than traditional Medicaid. So we have a good number of moms who utilize pregnancy Medicaid when they get pregnant in the state. We are the only state that only has that coverage for 60 days.
Which is nothing.
I mean, it's nothing. It's 2 months. You have a newborn, you're dealing with all of the things pertaining to having a new baby, and you lose your insurance.
Because this is just insurance. It's not saying, oh, your employer has to keep paying you to be gone.
Right.
It is medical care insurance.
It is medical care insurance. And, you know, I always like to give the numbers because a lot of people think that it's like, you know, women making thousands upon thousands of dollars. The top end of pregnancy Medicaid means that a woman is probably making somewhere around $42,000, and she has at least one baby, right? And so, as we know, again, we talked about the economy and how tough things are. That's, you know, you're still having to make some tough decisions pertaining to, you know, your family and your budget at that price. And so what is happening in our state is that at 60 days, women are losing coverage. In every other state in the country, it is extended out to 12 months, with the exception of one state, Wisconsin. They have 90 days. But everyone else goes all the way up to 12 months. And so you take our 60 days versus everyone else's 12 months. And you see that there's a disparity. And so the last legislative session, Representative Pilkington filed the bill to extend postpartum Medicaid. I tell folks, especially folks that are discouraged when that his bill, that session didn't pass, and that this year didn't pass again, at any time, DHS could do this. You know, the bill does direct them, but at any time, they could elect to decide to extend it to 12 months. And so where we are right now is that, you know, lots of people agree that we need to do this. People understand that we need to do this. But unfortunately, about a year ago, DHS, along with the governor, announced that they didn't want to do it. The governor stated that she felt like it was duplicative because we are a Medicaid expansion state. Many of us in this advocacy world and healthcare practitioners and individuals who see moms and support moms said, no, that's not the case, because by DHS's own report, every 3 months, 4,000 women are dropping off of coverage. And they're not necessarily, there's no indication that they're finding insurance in another place. And so it was like, it's important if we care about the health of that mom past 60 days that we address that. And so this time around, we tried to do some things with the funding. We tried to make sure that it was narrowly tailored so it couldn't be seen as, that it wouldn't be seen as being duplicative. Tried to make it as tight as possible, but to serve those moms that critically need that care. We had a number of moms who had been dropped off of coverage, moms who, you know, were receiving, you know, mental health support because they were also struggling with postpartum depression when they lost their coverage. Moms who lost their coverage while their children were in NICU, right? And when they were trying to, you know, be supportive to their children, but now they don't have a follow-up appointment. Like, just some really terrible stories of moms that were losing coverage in the process. We also had medical professionals there to say they had supported moms who lost coverage and who, you know, were able to get it back in another form, but now they can't go see the doctor who's cared for them throughout their entire pregnancy. So that person is no longer in network. Just a lot of logistical issues that could be solved by making an administrative decision. But and we thought we were on the pathway, you know. Representative Pilkington was able to get it out of the House Public Health Committee and then the House. And, you know, unfortunately, we got to the Senate and didn't make it out. Had some wonderful, wonderful individuals there to testify about the need. But unfortunately, we didn't get it. But I think one of the things I've learned being in this advocacy space is that, you know, when you talk to the moms and when you see how passionate they are, that gives you the motivation to keep on going. I know that if folks talk directly to the women who are impacted, they would say we need to do something. And so we continue to look at what we can do to serve these moms. We continue to press upon DHS, and that's always fun since I used to work there, is to call up folks. But, you know, I we're adamant that this is the solution that we need, because, you know, also there's a bunch of changes that are forthcoming in the federal government. And so we need to think about that if we're really serious about not seeing moms die. And that's, you know, I don't want to be, I don't know any other way to be but blunt pertaining to that. Like,
I've already kind of went there.
Yeah, you did. and rightfully so, because it's a number until it's your wife or your sister, you know,
or your college roommate,
or all the connections. But you shouldn't have to lose a loved one to say we have to do better than that. So,
and I need to point out too, Representative Pilkington has been so good.
So, yes.
As a man focused on women's health.
Absolutely.
And so kudos to him. I'm so glad you have him as a partner for these things.
And, you know, we attached ourselves to him. I want to make sure, you know, I convey that he has been dogged. And I'm so appreciative of that. And one of the things that he said, and he's, you know, he says, you know, he's a person of faith. He does not believe in abortion, but he believes that if we are a state that's not, you know, that doesn't allow abortions, then we have to ensure that, one, women can give birth. And that seems like it's simple, but in a state that has such a high, you know, maternal mortality rate, it's not given, so that she can give birth safely and that she can raise a family. We can't ask people to have children if they can't afford housing and if they can't afford food, if they can't afford childcare, all of these things that are a struggle in our state. So.
And if it's going to kill them.
And if it's going to kill them. Like, first and foremost.
So
let's make sure moms live.
I know the loss is painful.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing you're going to try again.
Oh yeah.
Oh, keep trying.
Yeah. Kicking and screaming. We're not letting this go. I tell folks the only way that we will stop advocating for 12 months postpartum is if a better, longer, more efficient option becomes available, because this is something that is significant. This is something that Arkansas has like, if women are losing coverage, there is a problem in the process. And so we need to address that. We can't expect women to get the care that they need if they don't have health insurance. You know, I talk to folks all the time. I don't know that, you know, health insurance is something that's on the forefront of individuals' minds. But the reality is that if I don't have insurance, I'm not going to the doctor. Point blank. You can tell me I need it. You can say how important it is. If I don't have it, I'm not going. And if I have a health insurance plan where I go to the doctor and then I get an unexpected bill that's $500-something-odd, I'm probably not going back, right? Yeah. So we can't be serious about addressing our health problems in the state if we're not looking at what the insurance system looks like and how we can make sure that Arkansans are covered. And we're talking about maternal health, but you can take that and apply it to
everything.
All of the number of health issues that unfortunately Arkansas ranks very poorly on, because we're not a very healthy state.
Okay, let's talk about future.
Yeah.
More optimistic things. What's next for advocates?
You know, we're still moving forward. You know, legislative session ending just means there's additional work to do. Right now, we are heavily focused on what is happening on the federal level. And I would like to talk about, you know, the positive things that Advocates is doing. But I do think that it's positive that we are leaning into what is happening with Congress, which is not something that Advocates has always done. But right now there are so many changes, so many significant changes that we need to be keyed into that. And we need to be able to give that information to our Kansans in a way that's not overly complicated. Because again, I know that folks don't necessarily think about Medicaid and SNAP and match rates on a daily basis, but it is very, very important, because even if you are a person that doesn't utilize Medicaid or SNAP, or if you're a person that just doesn't care about Medicaid or SNAP, then you will care about the fact that if the Congress makes changes, like if they make changes that does away with our expansion program, then you'll care if that means that your rural hospital is struggling or your rural hospital closes.
Yep.
Right?
Driving now 2 hours versus an hour and a half.
Exactly.
For that baby.
Exactly. And, you know, if the match rate is such that the state of Arkansas has to pay more into the program and it, you know, impacts our budget, well, we don't know what that means. If Congress makes significant changes to the Medicaid or SNAP program, then we're going to see a special session in the next couple of months for our legislature to figure out what does our state budget now look like? And are there some quality programs, good things that are funded that maybe we have to pull back or roll back on because of that? And I don't want to be doom and gloom, but it is extremely serious, and it is really important that we know. And it's also important for Arkansas Advocates that we tell, you know, the community what is happening, because if individuals have concerns, they should be conveying that to our congressional members as well, and talking about and asking what's happening next and what's happening, you know, at the federal government right now. So that's a big, big piece of what we're doing. We're also working on, you know, I just mentioned, we're working on what does Arkansas really look like? And that kind of sounds flippant, but
it's a real question. Who makes up the state? What do we care about?
What do we care about, and what do we need? So, you know, I had a great conversation with a couple of legislators who, you know, challenged me on that. And they said, you know, if you feel like Head Start is critical, if you feel like we need to make another investment in pre-K, which, by the way, we do. We used to be a leader. We haven't made investments like we should. All of these things, then show us what that investment does. Show us how many people use it. Show us how many people would be benefited if we expand those programs. And I was like, you know what? Challenge accepted.
I love it.
Let's do it, because it's absolutely right. We've been a big conversation that we thought, not to go back to things that we wish we would have seen, but one of the things that we thought was going to happen this session, because everyone was talking about it, was something that helped lower the price of childcare. Studies abound that show that childcare is more expensive than sending your kid to college now.
Oh, yeah. One of my good friends.
Yeah.
College kid? Baby.
Oh, God. Bless them.
She would say she would not have it any other way. Yeah. But also, yeah, I mean, I think the college is cheaper.
I bet it is. I mean, for the majority of the country, that is exactly the case that parents are facing, which is that it is much more expensive to send your child to care. And many parents in Arkansas don't have the options of just, you know, sending their child to grandma and grandpa. When my child was in childcare, my parents were working. Like, they got to go to work too. So it's not, you know, finding reasonable care is important. And leading up to this legislative session, one of the voices that was so critical in talking about that was business.
Yes.
So I have to give a shout out to another women-run organization, Excel by Eight, and Allison Williams, who was so dogged about working with the business industry because they were telling her just what we're talking about right now, which is that they saw during the pandemic, individuals left, they went home and they didn't come back. And when they looked and talked to people, some folks said, not paying childcare, it was actually kind of a wash for our family. And we realized that if we don't pay childcare and I stay home with the kids, then the other spouse can go to work and they would be okay because childcare was just that expensive. And so the business industry was like, no, we got to figure out childcare, right? And so we were hoping to see some form of a childcare tax credit and addressing that. And we didn't. But to tie that back into what we're working on, that's another aspect. Showing legislators, policymakers, key stakeholders, how much is the average cost of childcare in respective areas of the state? Because there are some folks that just don't know and just haven't had the conversation that we're having. I think about my friend circle. All of our kids are old, right? So we don't know how much child care costs right now, but we need to be talking about it.
During the pandemic, the city of Fayetteville looked at this, and I had the privilege of being on the committee for the new 20-year plan for economic development. But when it came to that piece, the women that opt out to get usually two kids, not childcare, or not school age.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it no longer makes sense to have a out of the home job because the childcare costs are just too much.
Yeah.
And so they opt out. That drives the wages down that they can ask for. And this is not child care is an issue. Women get paid less because they're maybe opting out. It is a devastating aspect for the taxes of any state, too, because then we're not bringing that in. It's a devastating thing to business, because then we don't have the learning there for these women.
Right.
Because they're overwhelmingly women. Some of them are. My husband stayed home with our kids. But that is a thing. And we are better as a community if we have childcare that's affordable.
If we have childcare. And I will tell you, we could spend another hour talking about childcare, what we need, the availability of it, the individuals that work in childcare facilities and how we're supporting them or how we're not supporting them currently. There are a number of things, just like as we're talking about maternal health, there's a number of things pertaining to childcare and what's happening that we need to be talking about. But I will say this about when I first got into this role, I was testifying about tax cuts. And I was actually saying, please don't cut taxes. Which is another thing we talk about at Arkansas Advocates. But I was saying, I respect the fact that individuals want to cut taxes. No one wants to pay high taxes, right? But the state of Arkansas needs to make investments. And if you are trying to make someone's living situation better, I imagine that instead of a small tax cut where I may get $40 off of my tax bill, if you take that money and you invest it into childcare and give me something like a childcare tax credit or something that will ultimately lower the cost of childcare, that's going to make a significant impact to my budget. And I was testifying, and a legislator said, "You mentioned childcare. Are you just talking about babysitting?" And it was like,
Oh no.
So, right. So it was like, no. And no. So,
Maybe we should have been this entire time saying early childhood education.
Exactly. But part of, one of the things I respect about that legislator was while I did not respect that comment at all, when I talked to him afterwards, he was willing to sit down and have a conversation about why he felt the way that he felt. And he was from rural area. There maybe was two childcare centers, and no one he knew utilizes childcare. They sent their children to their grandparents, or one of the spouses, typically the woman, stayed at home. And he was willing to acknowledge that maybe he wasn't as up to speed about early childhood education as he needed to be and the importance of it. And we talked about brain development. And if we're going to now have a third grade assessment pertaining to children reading, why would we not start as early as possible? So why would we not want more children in that setting with professionals who have training and certification to teach our children? You know, I'd like to think that, you know, I did the best I could raising, you know, my daughter. And during the time when she was three or four, I was not a teacher. I didn't have those certifications. I trust the teachers. So those are, again, conversations that we need to have. And if we're not putting it out there, having discussions about it, then we won't see changes. So it's extremely important to us that we start getting really down into some county level, very specific data about what Arkansas looks like. So that's in the work. And I have to make one more plug, which is we just launched our children's funding map. So if you go to our website, you will see our new fiscal map that shows you what we are spending money on pertaining to children in Arkansas. So that was actually information that wasn't readily available. Folks would ask us, how much are you all investing on childcare versus pre-K versus, you know, child insurance? And we were like, well, give me a minute. Let me go pull that data. Let me condense it and all that. And we thought, what if we had a report, you know, an easily accessible map where we could talk about that, and legislators and, you know, local officials could look at that and say, oh, no, in the city of Fayetteville, we can be doing better and we can make investments in this area, or statewide, we could do things better. So
you've never heard me geek out on data before.
So,
I'm going to stop because, yes, we will keep going. And now also need to go talk to the city of Fayetteville. Thank you so much. I am feeling so optimistic about the state.
Wonderful.
Because I know we have people like you and Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families pushing the ball forward for the entire state and making our world a better place. Well, so thank you for being here with me.
No, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for letting me talk about all the things we're working on. I appreciate you.